Hello, it's Anne Marie from Public Words Project, and I have a surprise spontaneous podcast with a fantastic Dr. Marla Parker.
Hello.
So listen, we're going to talk about some stuff about facing your fears, being brave in a political world, professional world. We're talking about, well, we start talking about, you tell me what you think we're talking about.
Yeah, so thank you again for having me.
Of course.
And before we actually started hitting the record button, we started to talk about my last bit of advice from my last podcast in terms of not being afraid of success. And Anne Marie brought up an excellent point that when we are afraid, sometimes that leads to procrastination and not facing our fear. And it sounds counterintuitive. Why would you be afraid of success? Because it can maybe expose some things about you.
Also, I mean, it goes back to that old saying, be careful what you wish for. I mean, that's a timeless saying.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I guess for a good reason, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And being successful, especially when you're going from one level to another, or transitioning, it does require some stretching of your capacity, and it requires you to do things that are perhaps uncomfortable. And so, even though success can sometimes be a space of progression for us, sometimes it can be a space of confrontation. And so,
Confrontation where?
a personal confrontation,
Like,
it can be that mirror that that we hold up to ourselves.
we
And
are our own worst enemy.
we are. And that kind of reminds me of, I'm thinking about imposter syndrome right now,
Tell me what
right?
that is.
If
Or
I
tell us what
can,
that is.
sure, if I can remember correctly, basically it's this feeling of inadequacy. Even if you're in a very powerful, successful place, you feel like you're an imposter, you don't belong there. And oftentimes you might hear a lot of women talk about being, having imposter syndrome, women of color having imposter
Oh, yeah.
syndrome perhaps. And whether through external or, internal triggers, we can sometimes feel that this is, we're beyond winging it here, right? I mean, it's not just, keeping our heads above water and kind of being that duck where you're calm on the surface, but just running amok below the surface. But it's really overcoming this notion of, maybe I don't belong here. Maybe I'm not as successful as people think I am or have the perception of me. And success can kind of do that to you because you're thrusted into these leadership and, power positions where you have to at least come off as being competent, and knowing what you're doing. And sometimes that can be kind of threatening.
It's like when I became a commissioner, the city council member was like, I'm appointing you. I'm like, what? Why? Me? What? And then just like what you're saying, I did that whole cycle over and over and over and terrified, just friggin' terrified of it. But I had been of service in many committees and many leadership groups for a long time. But when they put that title, and there's actually a legal and political responsibility you have more than just being part of a group, but I had to remember, well, if I don't know how to do it, I'll figure it out. I'll learn. I'll pay attention. I'll learn. And I picked up on it really quickly because it's, to me, it was common sense, but also it's just like that doubt that I had. I was like, wow. And then I became one of the best, most functioning commissioners they had.
Woohoo! So,
Woohoo!
if I may
Woohoo!
ask you a question.
Yes.
So, in addition to being mindful and aware that, what, I have done this before, like I have some skill set that's prepared me, what were the kind of tactical tasks and things that you had to do to get you to a point where you could mitigate, the fear and the imposter syndrome?
Well, I don't have any like buzzwords or anything like officious, but it's basically just breathing and taking a step back, taking some deep breaths, and looking at the larger picture and being like, why am I fearing this? What are the, not even just why, but like more specific, what is the reason? What are the reasons I am fearing this? And then looking at them metaphorically and in my mind's eye, and then comparing that to the reality of my professional life, things I've already done. So, just taking the theory of it and the practicum, just like when I was in college, I had trouble with the theory and the practicum because I'm always a practicum girl, gal, woman, female. So I always am in conflict with the theory and the practicum because I think sometimes with the theory of it, we think or we're taught to believe that it's higher or it's greater than we are. But it's like, it's the chicken and the egg syndrome, mm-hmm. which came first, the theory or the practicum, the practicum or the theory. So right. it's just, so I have to step back and use some common sense and some mind mapping to be like, okay, what's, oh, I've done that already. Oh,
absolutely.
You know, a steak is just beef. Okay, I got it, you know. Chicken fingers are chicken. I got it, you know. So it's just, so. That's my simplest answer to that.
No, that's great, because it speaks to this idea of mindfulness and how we have to incorporate mindfulness in our everyday, you know, navigating our workplace, you know, our relational space, our political spaces, public spaces, and the whole lot. But I like what you brought up, because I have to think about that with my students as well, especially when I'm introducing them to theory or they come across theory. And honestly, you know, in a scientific, rigorous context, theory is just about, we have made a bunch of observations
of the practicum,
of the practicum, and this theory is supposed to explain, even with limitations, this theory is supposed to explain how the world works and the people work, right? But, you know, critical analysis of theory acknowledges there are limitations to theory, right? And that theory can... Yes.
See, I haven't gotten that far, because I get to theory and I'm like, oh my God, I'm bored. I'm going to go do it. So,
it's
fascinating.
No, I mean, a good social scientist or a good scientist will acknowledge and even look for the limitations in theory and say, hey, you know what? This theory has some value.
Oh my God, you just flipped the light on. There was light coming through the ceiling and we're off. My God, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty decently smart. I'm a smart gal.
You're
wow,
super smart gal. Wow, super smart gal, woman,
female,
yes,
whichever chica, whatever. Chica. So I'm going to keep the cursing down because it's PG.
But you know, especially if you look at, you know, academic, you know, papers, there are papers that are not just geared towards analyzing data, but it is about moving theory forward because someone has found some kind of limitation or flaw in it because they realize, you know what, it doesn't work in this context, right? Or there are things that, you know, the originators of this theory didn't keep in mind, for instance, right? And so, you know, theory, at least in the scientific context, is just like a rigorous examination of the practicum, you know, of the observed world, and just saying, hey, this is what explains this pattern, right? But like, theory doesn't just stay put. It's always supposed to advance and to get better.
So when you're dealing with the students, I mean, I come from this campus, so I know I can speak with an open heart and honest mind and blunt wording. We're working class students, working class people, from working poor to working class, middle class, blue collar, come to this campus. And I remember the theory was always so hard to get wrap my mind around.
Yeah.
No pun intended. So, I mean... Tell me about your experience. I mean, because I remember very often having my resting bitch face or my ghetto, my, like, what? Like, I didn't understand it, so I went to, like, you know, and these poor professors probably are just like, okay, take. Actually, I had one professor who coached me out of that, who taught me.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't understand it. And she actually put her index finger on my forehead and said, unfurl your brow.
Ooh, boy, I should try that.
Elizabeth Bell Haynes was the professor who did that here at Cal State Los Angeles.
Oh, man.
And it changed my friggin' life.
I probably need to do that because you're right.
Well, this was in the theater department. I don't know if you can touch your students where you are.
I can't.
Theater department,
right,
that you can.
But that's maybe I can do it, like, metaphorically speaking, right?
And she did. She went, because we were doing breathing exercises, and it was a voice class, and she came and she said, you need to unfurl your brow.
Wow.
I was... in my 20s, that's the only expression I had.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So, that sounds really powerful.
It was powerful. And thank you, Elizabeth Bell Haynes, wherever you are.
There you go.
But I am sharing this with you because have you come across that type of affect here?
To a certain degree. But that's why, you know, not just me, but my colleagues in the MFA program, we are so insistent that students bring in their work experience. You know, when they are thinking about, well, how does this learning material, whether it's theory or not theory, how does this relate to my everyday life? And so we drive home the point that when you're going over readings, like going over learning material, it's not just you picking up words and content, but it's you actually thinking about how does this relate to my job?
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And even if you may not have a job, let's say in my context, in a public sector professional context, there are certain things that you can still pick up and say, I've seen this happen mm-hmm. in my place of work. Because like no matter where you at, where you're at, there are going to be certain practices and principles that go across the board, right? Like leadership, mm-hmm. you know, management, you know, organizational structure, you know, all those things.
Well, right? All jobs are service jobs. Mm-hmm. Name one job where you're not providing a service or getting paid for it. So
that's very, very true.
So that kind of travels across the boards.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we keep talking about different things like this, but, and I want people who are listening to understand that I know that we're not telling you, like, holding your hand and saying, this is how you use your public words. This is how you speak publicly. This is how you get more comfortable in your skin. But mm-hmm. we are talking about these things so that mm-hmm. you can start thinking about paths to getting more comfortable with your public words and right. within your own skin.
Right.
And it's not just like I'm standing in front of a room. Mm-hmm. gesturing right. and regurgitating words. It's mm-hmm. about, you know, taking this little curvy path
right.
to find all the nuances so that when you do get in front of a group and start speaking to them, mm-hmm. you can do so with your authentic voice
right.
and in a clear and concise manner. So mm-hmm. you can get your point across. Because storytelling mm-hmm. and public speaking, look at TED Talk.
Yes.
TED Talk.
Yeah.
TED Talks are all about great stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. We're going to keep talking about different things like this and as you listen so that you can take this little curvy path to finding yourself and finding your public voice. But before we wrap this up, one of the things I know about you, Marla, is that you are a great gal. She's looking at me with terrified. What is she going to say? I'm not going to say anything bad. But one of the things I want to start focusing on, and this, we're going to just talk about it right now a little bit. Mm-hmm. That'll be the next podcast is like mm-hmm. introvert versus extrovert.
Because
I've been told I'm an extrovert, mm-hmm. and you identify as an introvert.
Yes, I do.
So
I do.
And yeah. I got really offended when someone told me I was an extrovert because I'm also very introverted.
Well, then you might be an ambivert. That is a thing. I'm telling you. That is a thing.
Mom, I swear. I'm not empty anything. You already have one. Okay.
Yeah.
No, say it again. What is it?
An ambivert. Okay. So ambivert. Okay. So you're in between. You can navigate between both, which is a beautiful thing.
Because I do need to be very introverted when I'm being mm-hmm. creative and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also really enjoy the dynamic of community
and being in a group. And you're great at that. Yeah. You're great at that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You are. So.
Yes.
We know that I'm biverted. So, I'm going to start and create a little logo for that. All jokes aside,
right.
You speak mm-hmm. in front of people constantly and you identify as an introvert.
I do.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, this was part of the trepidation I had with being a teacher because I knew I would have to be in front of people all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, at first I was thinking, can I do one of these like kind of online things, you know, where I don't have to teach in front of people?
Oh my God.
Because I did.
Like a Max Headroom kind of like, right. Animation things.
Yeah, because I did do online teaching and I was so comfortable with that. Okay. But I could still be personal with people as well. And so getting up in front of people was just not my jam, you know, okay. like at all. And so I am comfortable in front of people. And for me, I didn't now, mm-hmm. not right now. And I still get nervous sometimes, but I think it's a healthy anxiety because okay. it means that I care about, you know, who's in front of me and how I'm going to be interacting with them. And am I going to say and be of value, say mm-hmm. something of value and be of value. But at the same time, for me, introversion, I really identify with needing that isolation and alone time to regenerate. Because yeah. I think the marker for extroverts is that they get a lot of energy, you know, from interacting with people and it's energizing and,
it can be both.
Oh, okay.
I mean, for me, as you're saying that, I started thinking, cause sometimes mm-hmm. I could be in a group and I'm like, I'm supercharged. It's like, right. we're going to save the world. And other times I'll be like, you're draining everything out of me.
See, ambivert,
okay.
right?
Is that okay?
Right, see, both.
So,
both.
I guess, yeah. I mean, is it, as sophisticated as that, or is that sometimes there's just a good group of people and there's a bad group of people?
Yeah, that, I mean, or there's that too. Yeah.
Not even good or bad, but just like a needy group and an empowered group.
Right. Or a group that you identify with, you know, the dynamics and the energy are just there, right? And this is getting into maybe social psychology with that, which I'm not.
So let's go back to introverts. I want to wrap this up in a couple minutes.
Sure,
what I want to do is I want the next podcast to be just about discussing you being an introvert and introverts, because I know there's a lot of introverts out there that are, they have to speak publicly and use their public words. So so for now I want you to start processing and marinating that next podcast is like about. And since you're an introvert, I'll give you the recording material and I'll put you in the room and turn the lights off and you can do the podcast and I'll be on the outside and I'll just tap on the door and ask when you're done.
So, no, this is another thing about introverts, right? We just have like a small circle of people who are our core, right? You're part of my core, so you can be in the room with me to do the podcast.
I'll just face the wall, like Blair Witch Project. Ooh, that'd be freaky, right? Did you see that movie?
I couldn't. It was too much. It was too much.
Okay, then we'll just do it. But next one, I'll joke inside because I'm like, I'm getting weird right now. So, my dear friend Marla has rescued me from a very disorganized day, so I applaud you, sister.
Not, hey, it's not a problem.
But
never serve.
I'm cutting you off because I'm getting really weird, and I'm using my public words unwisely. So listen, we're gonna wrap it up right now.
Sure.
And we're gonna, but the next time Dr. Parker is with us, we're gonna talk about her as an introvert and a public speaker and a professor and also a woman, a female leader who is often put in front of groups and students and people to speak. So it's, we're going to talk about how an introvert carries that burden.
Sure.
Or if it's even a burden and just start focusing on that. So introverts can unite. Okay.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that because I wish I had that same kind of insight because I had to struggle with it on my own.
This is a service.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, high five.
High five.
Yay. Woo-hoo. Bye guys. See you next time.
Bye bye.